Hello, listeners. I always, you know, I usually want to say, like, good afternoon, but then I realize that that has no meaning anymore. The time of day has no meaning anymore. It's afternoon where we are, but where we both are, but I don't know where our listeners are. So anyway, hello. It is Trish Lambert and the incomparable Laura Burkholz.
Hello.
Hello, Laura. Doing another Riddles in the Dark Digest for our listeners and fans. Today we are doing dealing with Riddle 2.06, which is our first foray into Lake Town, and talking about specifically about Bard. And let me just say what the riddle is, and then we're going to just jump right into it, okay?
Okay.
The riddle is, what is Bard's relationship with the company going to be when they're in Lake Town? A is he has no presence or only a cameo role, which is the closest to a book answer because we don't even see him in the book when they first get to Lake Town.
Mm-hmm.
B, he supports them openly. C, he supports them but secretly. D, he openly opposes them. E, he works against them secretly. Now, we've had there have been a number of questions from the Riddles in the Dark Facebook page folks, you know. What if it's this? You know, what if he does this and what if that? You know, which would this fall under? There's been a little bit of, like, well, I don't understand. You know, people have been a little bit confused about these choices, I think. I mean, I think A is pretty obvious. We don't see him or there's a cameo role, which basically is there simply to be the closest to the book answer because we do know that we're going to see him based on Peter Jack's, you know, sneak peek. In fact, we're going to see more of him than Tolkien even wrote in. But this whole thing about how does he support them or oppose them, I think it really has to do with, first of all, is he going to support, you know, does he support the dwarves? Is he behind the dwarves on their quest? Does he mm-hmm. support them and, you know, get behind you,
yes.
Help you? And then the other is, does he do it secretly or openly, which kind of brings it into something that we haven't yet talked about in a Riddles in the Dark Digest that I know, I mean, not Riddles in the Dark Digest, Riddles in the Dark podcast, which I know Dave wants to talk about, which is a sort of sociopolitical climate in Lake Town. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the openly or secretly, I think, has to do with, you know, the sort of the reigning power, which would, of course, be the Master of Lake Town. You know, is he for or against the Master of Lake Town, which almost kind of then determines whether he's going to be open or secret in his support of dwarves, mainly because I think we can safely assume, I hope, that the Master's not really that, you know, that much in support of the dwarves and their quest. I mean, he's kind of threatened by the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, the Master, he kind of just wants them, he kind of wants them out of town, doesn't he?
Yeah, you know? He does. And the fact that they make a big deal in the book, especially, you know, they party down. I mean, when they mm-hmm. find out it's Thorin, they're singing in the streets and there's, you
oh,
know,
sure.
beasts.
Yeah.
And
yep.
parties. And the Master's not happy about that. He's feeling very threatened by the whole situation.
Yeah, well, I think he thinks it's a fool's errand and he, you know, but he's more than happy to sort of support them just to be popular, but
right.
is thinking, yeah, well, the dragon's going to kill him, so.
Right. Yeah. Now, I don't know what Dave is going to do with that. I mean, in fact, like I said, we haven't really talked about it in Riddles of the Dark, so, and I know that Dave wants to, so at some point
okay.
you and I are going to be
so we will,
just on the
yeah.
larger,
we will
the larger
that
topic. Yeah.
Conversation for another time.
I'm betting that the Master's going to get much more drawn in detail by Jackson.
Yeah, I think he's going to be pretty devious, is what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But now, Bard, you know, I mean, I when I saw Jackson's sneak preview, you know, Bard is the one at the tiller when it looks, I think it's, you know, when I gather, it was in the boat, there were barrels in the boat, everybody's bedraggled and, you know, Bilbo's bitching about that he should never have come east kind of thing. And my impression then is that it's actually Bard that fishes them out of the river when they're mm-hmm. in the barrels.
Mm-hmm.
So we meet him, you know, early on, and he's really the one that takes them into Lake Town.
Yeah.
And then we see him doing all the sort of James Bondy, Robin Hoody kind of things, you know, running around. And Jackson says that, you know, he actually says we want to make Bard kind of an enigmatic character.
Yes.
In movie 2, and you kind of get, you see him sort of doing all these gymnastic things around Lake Town. So, you know, I'm wondering, well, actually, I'm the one that brought it up, and I know a couple of the listeners said it was Zorro. You know, he made me think of Zorro.
Oh, okay.
You know, champion of the downtrodden
yeah.
kind of thing, you know. So, I can't, So then it's like, and then we also see a scene where he's in this town square, I think at the same time that the dwarfs are declaring themselves, and the soldiers of Lake Town are like, have formed a ring around the dwarfs, and I think Bart is actually standing inside the ring, like inside where the dwarfs
are standing. Ah, okay.
But other than that, you know, we didn't see any dialogue or anything at that point. I think that's the point where the master's up in his little balcony, you know, doing things. So, I don't know. You know, we know he's a good guy. I mean, we know from the book he's a good guy.
Yeah.
You know, but I think the other thing that we kind of talked about, too, is, you know, is his lineage going to even be
mentioned?
Referred to, you know, and are we going to know?
Oh, yeah. I bet it will. Because that'll set him up kind of as the hero. You know, a little bit like Strider was in the first movie.
Right.
You know, here's this guy with this incredible lineage, but he doesn't really have a place other than as sort of a, you know, on the fringes, a little bit like Strider was. So,
would frustrate him because, you know,
because he feels, you know, like his rightful place is
in Lake Town. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that also gives him and Thorin, I would think, some common ground as well.
True.
You know, that he would have empathy then for the dwarves, the quest. Now, I said C to the question.
Okay.
I said support them, but secretly. And I think the reason that I kind of did that was because of all this kind of furtive jumping around that I saw him doing in Jackson's preview. Yeah, that, you know, that he's not gonna openly declare. Because somebody said, I think you may have asked me, or somebody asked me, you know, if he's supporting them openly, does that mean he's actually, like, broadcasting out, you know, in front of everybody? And, yeah, basically, you know, like in that scene where he's in the ring with them, that he's, you know, advocating openly for them would be him supporting them openly. Now, frankly, I could see that as well, but I do think he supports them. It's just a question of whether he does it or openly.
Okay.
I mean, let's talk about you. Did you,
you
did answer.
Yes, I think he's going to oppose them because I think he thinks that it's going to be a disaster, and I think he's going to have an idea that he's obviously going to want to get rid of the dragon, but I think he's going to look at 13 dwarves and a hobbit and say, you're crazy, you know, what are you doing? And he's going to think that it's just going to stir up trouble. I think that's my idea. I think he's probably not going to oppose the dwarves as people. You know, I think he might offer them an alternative suggestion. You know, why don't you settle here? But, you know, going after the dragon, how in the world are you going to go after the dragon?
Right, right.
So that's why I think he's going to oppose them. I think he's got enough common sense that he's going to try to talk them out of
it,
but in a different way than the Master of Lake Town. The Master of Lake Town is not going to try to talk them out of it. He's just going to secretly, you know, privately think, oh, what a crazy thing to do. But if you want to go die, go ahead, you know. So just get out of my town.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, you're certainly taking the unique view, I think.
Yeah, I don't think anybody agreed with me. See, I have not seen Peter Jackson's preview. So I didn't see all that stuff. But I don't think it completely goes against what we've seen. Because, you know, even though he's picking them up and he's bringing them into Lake Town, they won't have told him what they're doing yet. He may just think they're on their way to see Dane. But I think once he hears, oh, they're going to go and they're going to try to fight the dragon, he's going to say, no, you are crazy. You can't do it.
Don't go.
Yeah.
A suicide errand. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But I think I think we are going to see Bard talking about Dale and talking about, you know, the glorious town of Dale, just so we get a sense of his possible future as the King of Dale.
So that it won't be a sudden surprise.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So another king without a country kind of.
Yeah.
Without a kingdom kind of thing. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Well, let's see what Mark Fisher has to say. Good old Mark, you know, sent us his little write-up on it. So he says, you know, what is Bard's relationship with the company going to be when they were in Lake Town? I'm going to take a slightly different angle on the boat scene here, which is a bit of a gamble since I can't find a really clear image anywhere on the web, he says. Rather than showing Bard sailing the doors into Lake Town, I'm going on the assumption that they're actually leaving and that Bard is steering the boat on its way to the ruins of Dale. Interesting. That would make some sense if anyone from Lake Town would take on that job. It would be the heir of Gurion. Gurion, I think I'm saying that right. At least it seems plausible that he'd be ready to make the journey while most of the Lake men would want to stay behind. If that's right, and it's as big an if as usual, then it seems inevitable that he must be openly helping the dwarves. So that's a B answer. So that's okay. Still another take. So, you know, he's thinking, okay, well, maybe the boat trip is going away from Lake Town. I don't think it is.
Well,
because, like I said,
it wouldn't be so bedraggled.
No, because they're really bedraggled, and Keeley's got a wound that Bilbo refers to, and, you know, so you definitely get the impression it's, you know.
Yeah, but like Mark says, she didn't see the actual footage. She just saw a picture.
Right. Now, we also have Scott Holbrook Faust has given us an answer, and he's written a little bit. Scott had to catch up, but he, bless his heart, he's caught up with answers. So he's also answered C, which is something that that Dave and I both said. But he says C, but not for the reasons cited by Dave and I, or me, Dave and me. He says, I don't particularly think that there's a lot of cause to suspect him as a vigilante, Robin Hood-esque, Aladdin-type character. I feel like there won't be nearly enough time to build him up as that much of a roguish outcast and yet have a complete turnaround once the dragon is dead. Rather, I think his role will be one of a fairly unpopular loner who tends to be rather introverted and pessimistic, but nonetheless wise, insightful, and not a little opportunistic. Unlike Corey, I don't see him as making mystical prophecies of doom from street corners, as fun as that might be. Rather, he's just a smart, pragmatic downer with a minimum of charisma. I do find it interesting. I do find it interesting as well that they've cast his son Bane, so presumably we're going to get at least a glimpse of the Bardic family life. I wouldn't be at all surprised to find him being influenced by an invented and hitherto unnamed Mrs. Bard. I doubt Dolly Girl will be brought up again. Sorry. I know Yana is really into this doll, you know, the doll
yes,
we see.
Yes, we'll hear about that later, right? Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah, well, that's right. We will hear about it later. Yes, yeah. So that's a C from Scott. Now, as far as our other folks, as we said, just to review, Corey had said B, which is supporting them, but openly, right? Am I got
mm-hmm.
that right?
Yeah.
Flip back. Dave and I and Scott said C. Laura said D. Mark and Arwen Kester from Middle Earth News also said B. So they're in the Corey camp. I'm with my grid here. Oh, gosh. See, now, when I do the grid thing, it moves all the way to the end, so I can't see everybody. Wait a minute. Stick with me here for a second, because I don't want to leave anybody out. Let's see, do we have any? We don't have American Golden Star. We don't have answers from yet.
Oh, really?
Not yet, but Lillian and L'Oreal, the Warriors of Westfold, they say B. And actually, the most popular answer on our Facebook page, the Riddles in the Dark Facebook page, is also B. So B seems to be the
majority. Yeah, so I'm like the only D. Well, that's okay, because if it's that, then I'll...
Okay. Yeah, that's right. You'll snap. So now I'll turn it over to you. What do our Facebook and Mythgardia Institute site folks have to say?
Well, Joanne Redeker says, I like the Robin Hood comparison.
That's actually Yana. That's Yana.
Yana. Oh, I'm sorry. Yana.
That's Yana, yes. This is our Dolly boy here.
Okay. I like the Robin Hood comparison, but I like the Zorro one even more. The old Disney Zorro was one of my favorite series growing up, and the kind of athletic, stealthy vigilante could work well for Bard. At least that's what I think. But my favorite part of the episode must be the title, especially since our family dog is named Dolly. It still cracks me up. My answer is C, though I'm not very confident about this one. I still think he could support them openly as well, but that he would actually oppose them seems to me pretty unlikely. Oh, and on the little girl, unless it's specifically stated on screen that she's not Bard's ancestor, I'm going to stubbornly believe that she is, the same way as I still believe that a moth that comes to Orthanc was sent by Radagast. I'm good at deluding myself in these sorts of things. It helps me to enjoy these movies more. Of course, if she does turn out to be related and it's made definite, I won't be able to restrain myself in cheering. The theater, I hope they just won't kick me out for it. So,
to give a little background on this, Yana came up with the idea that the dolly that was burning in the beginning of movie one and the little girl looking at it, is Bard's, like, great-great-grandmother. And that somehow, yeah. So the reason this is called Vengeance for My Dolly is because during the episode we were joking around about this because Yana was on the broadcast.
So he has a dream, huh? And
Bard is, you know, that his grandmother gives him the dolly and says, you must, you know, avenge our family.
Yeah. Well, you know, wouldn't that have happened way too long ago for him?
Well, we were figuring this out, actually. And was it 60 years previous?
I thought that the Battle of Azanulzabar happened 100 years before.
But the dragon taking over Dale was the deal. So it's a little dolly was burning when the dragon took over Erebor.
But that would have been even before the battle of...
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Well, now, but it depends on how you're talking about Jackson's timeline or Tolkien's timeline.
Well, that's true. That's true. We've got two different timelines going on.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I wonder if... I really don't think that's going to happen. I think that scene was just in there for effect, and I don't think we're going to see the Dolly Girl. But let me tell you what Kate Nichols says. She says, during the podcast, I joked about the former Dolly woman appearing to give Bard a black arrow and tell him he is Geryon's heir. But I have another idea. I think it would be more interesting if Bard knew who he was but had given up any idea of going back to Dale. But when Thorin appears and his passion inspires Bard, who offers to go with him, Thorin turns him down, which is the beginning of Bilbo's unease about Thorin's ambitions, and establishes a Bilbo-Bard relationship, which will come into play with the Arkenstone later. So I pick C. That's very interesting. You know, I can kind of see that. I can, you know, I think if Bard is going to support them, I think it's going to be something like that, where he talks to Thorin and Thorin starts him dreaming, you know, on this. But, you know, at least in the book, when the dragon shows up, Bard is more like, well, I knew this was going to happen, you know.
Yeah,
that's why I think he's going to oppose them. But
yeah.
Okay. Well, let me go on. Adam Parsons, I think it's F. He has a larger role, but his attitude is either for or against. I think he'll help them, but it won't be a big thing. I think Han Solo and Mal Reynolds, we won't see any true allegiance until film 3.
Now, I don't get Han Solo and Mal Reynolds.
Who's Mal Reynolds?
Mal Reynolds is Firefly. Isn't Mal Reynolds Captain Mal on Firefly?
Well, I have seen one episode of Firefly, so, you know, people can start sending me emails about
doesn't have to explain this to us. Think Han Solo and Mal Reynolds. We won't see any true allegiance until film 3. So I can get...
I see that, because Han Solo was sort of, you know, playing both sides a little bit until he...
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I get that part, but I don't get the Mal Reynolds part. There was no three-film deal. Anyway, all right. So, anyway, I understand. But,
okay. How do I answer this from ADE? Help, I'm going to go for B or C, but I think it'll be a little more hidden and vague than that. So, okay. All right. So, Dennis, and this is from the Mythgard page. The answer is B, and here's why. The dwarves wash up with little more than the clothes on their back. Even if they are not given 14 ponies, chances are they'll need to be resupplied. I doubt Bard would have the resources to do that, so the chances of them secretly doing so are slim. Instead, the master, being a political being motivated by his own interests, will probably consider alerting his allies, the elves. I expect he will be convinced otherwise by the populace, and he will grudgingly provision them and send them on their way, perhaps also alerting the elves on the sly. Bard may play a role in convincing the master to do this, and will thus openly support the company, but will not be the one to provision them. I just do not see any feasible way of the dwarves getting the support in secret. How do they get away with provisions, ponies, etc.? The resupplying must be in the open, and if they did, they would be tracked. No, they leave with official support of the town. I also fully expect the character of Bard to be introduced whilst at Lake Down. Having a heroic monster slayer appear out of the blue just won't work. And finally, the snow is probably a device for Balin to say to Thorin, look, buddy, we've got to keep going. It's almost Durin's day. It will be there just to allow one of the characters to remind us that they have an important rendezvous. The clock is ticking and the audience may need a reminder is all. I think that could be true about the snow. There was that I've seen pictures of the snow and people saying, why is there snow in Lake Town? But that makes sense. So, I think about
just remind us of the season, what season it is.
Yeah, I think the master will be doing the resupplying and, you know, Bard may be helping with other things.
Well, here's another thing that I think is interesting. I mean, why should we assume that they're going to have ponies? This is one of the things that I think all of us have to be careful about when we're talking about the movie versus the book. Yes, in the book they had ponies, but it doesn't mean that they're going to have ponies in the movie.
That's true.
You know that we have to kind of keep catching ourselves on making some certain assumptions because
things are a lot better. Maybe they'll have rabbits to carry.
Well, and in fact, I think I do recall, unless I dreamed this, that they do take off from Lake Town in a boat.
Oh, okay.
Now, did they do that in the book? I can't remember. I don't remember seeing a pony. So
yeah, I think they may have just gotten a ride to shore, but I don't think they would have. They went very far on the boat. They had ponies. So
and I do remember
you're right.
Boat.
They
There's
don't need
feel about the dragon heavy.
There's
they,
no need for them to have it. Ponies.
So we need to be careful on what we assume Jackson is going to automatically put into the book, to the movies, you know,
yeah,
the book, especially details like that. You know, you got to think, well, are ponies going to be absolutely essential to the story of the movie? Probably not, you know.
Yes. So why have them in there? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So, and then Marie says, I answered A, mostly because I'm not convinced of any of the others fit. I think Bard is too skeptical of the dwarves' ability to succeed to support them openly or secretly. On the other hand, I do not think he will oppose them either. He may, as a curmudgeon, but basically good guy, help them into Lake Town, but leave them to their own devices. I think the expression, good luck with that, you fools, thrown out by the professor, I believe, will best sum up his attitude. I agree with Dennis on the master's role, but not so much Bard's. So, yeah. And then Matt says, I'm thinking there will be an element of political intrigue in Lake Town. At some point, the corrupt master took control of the town away from the rightful ruling family. Because his family was deposed, Bard is an outcast and actively ridiculed by the master and his followers. This smear campaign by the master could explain why he seems like a bit of a crackpot that everybody ignores. Maybe people are even afraid to listen to him for fear of retribution from the master. I can see the master being a less deranged, more corrupt version of Denethor and the stewards of Gondor from the film. The stewards only have power because the king hasn't returned, and many even question the continued existence of the royal line. Similarly, because maybe the master only has power and political support, because nobody believes the prophecy that the king of the dwarves will return. Possibly it is even illegal to bring dwarves into the town. The return of dwarves to the town could lead people to believe in the prophecy and Bard's soapbox ramblings again. So that's
there is a thing. Scene, you know, in Jax's preview where his servant comes in, you know, the master's in bed and he comes in and says some dwarves came into town and Fry jumps out of bed and says, dwarves, I didn't give you, you know, I didn't, you know, consent for dwarves to come into town. So, you know, I could kind of see.
Well, that could be.
It's conceivable.
He's such a bureaucrat that he has to have consent for anybody unusual to come into town. It wouldn't necessarily have to be dwarves, you know. So it could be just a humorous thing, you know. Oh, I didn't approve this. Okay. Well,
this is actually bringing up a lot more angles, than I really considered.
Well, I hope you guys do talk about it on the regular digest.
I know David.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So,
I'm curious to hear what David Koresh had to say about the sociopolitical situation.
Yeah, that would be really interesting to speculate on. So, okay, and Adam. I thought they had addressed the issue with 100 years ago sort of line in Bilbo's monologue, but perhaps I misremember. I did certainly assume that they were making Erebor's fall a long time ago, 50 to 100 years, not 20 to 30 years. Perhaps he is deliberately vague about it, which is the beauty of a film like that. I certainly assumed Thorin was old, but had just aged well, thanks to his noble lineage, as part of Durin's line. So he's talking about the you know, how long ago did all this happen?
Right.
Because if it's 100 years ago, then Bard's royal lineage wouldn't be as big an issue as if it just happened 20 to 30 years ago. So,
right.
And then, you know, the girl with the doll you know, if it happened 100 years ago, she probably is not Bard's grandmother. She probably would not be alive still. So.
Well, we joked around about her being his great-great-grandmother, you know, where it's this tradition that's, you know, gone from father to son or whatever, you know.
Maybe she'll appear.
I personally think it's out. I don't really take that silly. I mean, when Yana brought it up.
I think that's that may be departing a little too far from.
Nobody's going to remember her, that Ellie Vernon. Yeah, and I think it was just a vignette.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, it's not like a smoking gun. Okay, it's a smoking doll, but it's not.
You know, and unless they do some kind of a flashback to Dale at the time that the dragon first entered to talk about the ruling family, because we didn't see any of that.
No, we
didn't see anything to do with Ben at all.
No.
Unless they do some kind of a flashback, you know, I don't know. That's kind of an interesting one, too. I don't
know. Well, we'll see.
How they deal with it.
So then he goes on, on the subject of Dwalin's baldness, which, did you talk about that, I assume? I don't remember
that.
Yeah,
we laughed about
that because he's more bald. Yeah, so that would be the passage of time.
Yeah.
It says, don't forget, according to Tolkien, dwarves do not suffer from baldness. So, in fact, Dwalin might have just shaved it off and had tattoos done, which put him a few scars and a bit of gray off looking exactly the same. P.S. Bard is totally going to be the lost heir of Dale. He's got that Aragorn vibe of a rough-looking vagrant. All that glitters is not gold.
Right.
Yeah. I think they could do that without departing too far from the book. So I think they're going to. I think they're going to do that. So. All right.
Yeah, and I think, you know, so I think Bard is actually going to be kind of the new, you know, a new, you know, one of the protagonists of movie two. You know, he'll be.
Yes,
like
I think so. I think he'll be
kind of like Théoden was the protagonist of Two Towers. You know what I mean? Kind of that side sort of side story thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're going to bring him out. So, and I wonder how much he'll have to do with the orcs. That's the other thing I kind of wonder. You know, is Bard going to be running up against these orcs that are following the dwarves?
God, I hope not. Because, geez, you know, so far we got everybody. You know, Bjorn's got a thing. He's going to torture a dwarf. We've seen a scene with Tauriel, you know, interrogating an orc. Did I say dwarf? I meant orc. So I hope to God we get a break from the orcs when we're legged out.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so, too. I hope they don't.
Maybe Azog gets siphoned off to Dol Guldur because the battle's happening or something.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we get a little bit of a break, or we'll see the orcs
Bard,
over in Dol Guldur.
Yeah, I think in the Battle of Five Armies, Bard will do something heroic.
Oh, sure. Definitely. I mean, they'll have to.
Well, that brings us to our conundrum for this week. Will Bard have a personal grudge against the Master of Lake Town? For example, he cheated him out of his inheritance.
So when we say this is not like social outrage because the master is like a despot.
Yeah.
He's treating the people badly. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about something actually personal, familial.
Yes.
Right. He's not got like the master directly done him wrong.
Yes. Yes. Okay. I think absolutely. I think the master of Lake Town is
yes.
My answer is yes. And I think the Master of Lake Town, from the way it's looking and even the way he was portrayed in the book, you know, he's going to have done something that makes Bard mad. You know, Master of Lake Town is not going to like Bard. He's going to see Bard as a threat. He is not the kind of guy to just let things lie. So I think the Master is going to have done something. You know, I don't know exactly what it was, whether he just, you know, is afraid of him and so refuses to appoint him to any positions, or, you know, is always working against him secretly, or if he openly is, you know, speaking out against Bard and pushing Bard to the edges of the, to the fringes of society. I'm not sure exactly what, but I think they will. He will have a personal grudge against the master.
So Bard will voice this. He'll specifically refer to.
Yes. Yes. I think so.
He'll make it very clear that he's got something. Yeah. Now, I'm going to say no on this.
I
think that Bard will have. Well, yeah, this is, we always have, you know, contract.
That's
God
okay.
forbid we should all be the same, right? I do think that he won't like the master. I mean, I do think that he's going to be like a rebel you know, whether he's overt or covert about it. I think he's going to be a rebel, you know, kind of the Zorro character. But I think it's going to be more in the sense of social outrage, you know, and that Bard as a champion of the people, you know, Robin Hood kind of thing. Well, I guess actually Robin Hood, I guess the sheriff did do something to him directly, but I think he's going to be more like, you know, a superhero kind of, you know, good of the people, but not necessarily because there's a personal, you know, that the master did something too personal.
Okay.
So we'll see how this turns
we'll
out.
See. We'll see.
We'll see.
Lots of interesting stuff. So.
Well, that's great. Well, onward upward. Oh, we're going to talk about Miss Con and Miss Mooch. Shall we do that?
Yeah, let's talk about the myth gatherings. So MythCon is coming up next month, and it is going to be in East Lansing, Michigan. And Tricia and I will both be there. Now, Trish, you're offering a paper. I'm just going to be there
as
an attendee. But it's a fun gathering. It's a mixture of academics and fun stuff. So I would encourage everybody who's in the area or interested to come.
MythCon 44. They've got a site, and you can look and see what's going on, and it takes place. I think the main sessions are Saturday and Sunday. I think there's something Friday night.
Monday morning.
And, like Laura said, and Monday morning, okay. And then, and like Laura said, you know, there's some entertainment stuff going on. And also, in addition to me, there's at least two other Myth Girls that I know that are going to be presenting. Laura Lee Smith and Chris Swank are presenting, I know. And
yes,
I think one of the guys is, too. I can't remember his.
Andrew?
Now, I don't know if Andrew is or not. But I know there's somebody, I think, local. I'm trying to remember who it was that said he was going to
Well,
be
and also, and it's put on by the Mythopoeic Society. And Corey's book is nominated as one
as the
Outstanding Inklings Study.
Inkling Studies, yeah, along with Dr. Flieger's book.
That's right, Dr. Flieger as well. So.
We have two of our books. That's right. So, yes, and you and I are going to try and do a little bit of live broadcasting. Can, right?
I think.
In fact, might even try to do live, you know. I might ask Corey if we can use the Myth Mood, or maybe he'll
maybe interview a couple interesting people that we find there. Do some live broadcasting from the bar. That's always fun.
Yeah, that's always fun. So I want to bring everybody up to date on Myth Mood. I mean, bringing up to date is sort of like, put that in like, you know, apostrophe, I mean, in quotation marks. Because we're still in the planning phase. But I did want people to know that there will be a Myth Moot 2, Mythgard Institute's Myth Moot, and it will be the weekend that the second Hobbit movie gets released, which is December 13th. That's on a Friday, December 13th. It'll be that weekend, so the 14th and 15th of December. It'll be in the same place. We'll watch the movie. There's a Cinemark movie. It's in basically the airport is Baltimore Washington Airport. And the Marriott is the airport Marriott, which is very close to the airport. In fact, you know, if people come in, they have a shuttle that'll get you to the hotel. And the theater is also very close by. And we'll be doing what we did. Well, we'll be doing what we did last year, but with a little bit of a difference. We're going to be moving ourselves a little bit closer to an academic track. We're going to actually have a call for papers coming out. And I don't want that to daunt anyone, because we will still stay very much of a fan base, you know, like Laura was just saying about MythCon, you know, there's some scholarship and there's also, you know, good old fan activities.
Sure.
But we're adding the tracks. So this year, instead of having sort of like panel, you know, moderated by the preceptors of Mythgard, we're actually going to have, we're inviting folks to come present papers on a lot of different things. In fact, Laura and I were talking before we started the podcast today, you know, of having, you know, I'd love to see a track on like video games, you know, like Lord of the Rings Online and you know, War of the North and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I'd probably moderate since I'm a big LOTRO player.
Because you're a big LOTRO person, yeah. So we're working on getting all that stuff together, and there will be plenty of notice for that kind of thing. And we'll keep you guys, you know, posted. But I did want to make sure that everybody knows that it is that weekend, the 14th and 15th of December, in the Baltimore area, very close to Baltimore Washington Airport. So if you're in the area, or you can fly in, and I think this year, again, we're going to have folks coming in from all different directions. I'm coming from Texas. I think he may, again, is coming from Alaska. We may even be able to talk Penny from New Zealand into coming.
Oh, yeah.
It should be fun. And we're working on getting, you know, some even more folks, you know, coming for, like, VIP guests and musicians and all that kind of good stuff. So it should be another fun weekend. And, of course, Corey, you know, Corey by himself is always good. And I believe Dave Cale is planning to attend, as is Laura Burkholz. So
yes, I am. All the way from Wisconsin.
All the way from Wisconsin. So we'll have the four Riddles in the Darkers.
That's
so you'll
right.
see us more than just our little anime pictures that I put up.
That's right. That's right. You see how accurate Trish was.
That's a threat. Yeah, so that'll be fun. All right, well, anyway, so let's wind her down, another Riddles of the Dark digest in the can, and Laura, I'll let you take us out.
All right, well, thanks for listening, and Godspeed.